Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. Show. And welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm Bruce Marable, your host for today, and I am very excited to chat with John Baldino, founder of the HR consulting firm Humoriso. And today we're going to talk and dig into the topic about the business of HR. John, thanks for coming to the podcast.
Bruce, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
As always, we got to be very excited about the people coming on here because we know that you are dedicating a lot of your precious time. So, although you told me that you didn't want to bore the audience by going into your background, I am still going to ask you, against your will, to start by telling the audience a little bit about your background and a little bit about Humoriso and how you got there.
So, I mean, you're going to start with going against my will. This is going to be a great time. I can tell
it
you
will.
That.
It will. I'm sure you're so glad that you came on the podcast now.
I got to go. So, again, thanks for having me on. So, quickly for me, background-wise, I am 27 years in human resources, training, curriculum development, leadership development. Your basic HR blocking and tackling, your strategic engagements in HR, all of that over the span of my career. And it's been an awesome ride. One of the best things I think that I can say is everything that I've gotten to do has taken me across this country for sure and other parts of the world. But I've always been able to maintain a Philadelphia home base. And I love Philly, love the city, and I'm glad to be able to do that. So, that's kind of a fun nuance. I haven't had to relocate to a bunch of different places in order to have those experiences. And about 5 years ago, actually a little over 5 years ago, I left the corporate world. And as the employee of one corporation, and set out to start what is Humoriso, which is a, as you mentioned, a human resources consulting firm. And the work that we do is everything that you can think of that an HR department would do on a consulting basis. So we serve in support of existing HR departments and personnel. Or in some cases, we serve as the HR department for a number of organizations. And so we'll do that blocking and tackling, the admin, the compliance. We will handle all the components of training and development. And we will engage at the strategic levels for organizational design and development, workforce planning, true business development in the full sense of the term. All those things that help an organization to really leverage itself in its human capital considerations, we do that as well. So it's like everything from CHRO all the way down to your entry-level HR admin.
See, that was great, and I'm sure no one was bored by that.
Well, we'll find out.
So I really want to get into the business of HR. We've really haven't spoke about this yet. I mean, we've talked about different things like diversity, engagement, and a lot of the functional areas and responsibilities of HR. But I really want to talk to you and go even a little off script about what should an HR person be doing? How do they show value? And a lot of other things. But let's just start here. What should an HR department or person be doing?
Wow. Right, in 20 words or less.
Yes. Yeah. Like what is HR? Because you have people that look at HR, and again, this is not me, for all you HR people out there that love me. People who think, you know, all you're doing is responsible for throwing birthday parties and benefits. But then other people really believe that HR should be a people operations manager and really care about the people and nurture them and care about culture and engagement. But overall, what is the HR function responsible for?
It is responsible for the business health and personal health of the talent for which it pays. At the end of the day, that's our responsibility. What does that mean? If we have unhealthy people, they're not going to be productive. And we pay for productivity as a company. So if we aren't caring well for our people, we're not going to get the best return on our investment. And I don't mean that in a cold, you know, unfeeling sort of, you know, I'm only looking at metrics. But to be honest, we pay for a value of the folks that we say are qualified to do the job that we've hired them to do. If we can't tap into that well, we're not getting the biggest bang for our buck. On the other side of it, we also understand that, not to be trite, because this term is overused, we do understand that well-engaged people will learn to have an intrinsic desire to do well for their organization despite the lack of a raise that they think they should have gotten, or the fact that they don't get as much in benefit as they were hoping. They have pride in their work. They have pride in the reason the company's doing what it's doing. That's why in many ways, this whole incubation phase that we see happening in our country, the Benjamin's Desks, the WeWorks, these, you know, spaces, particularly around metropolitan areas, where we're encouraging creativity in business development for these 1Z, 2Z, 3Z companies that are, you know, sharing a table at a shared office space, they're passionate. They are not making a ton of money, but they believe wholeheartedly in what they're doing. It is possible for an HR person to develop that within an organization of 100, of 1,000, of 10,000, in the way in which we develop our people and invest in them so that they understand what they're bought into. It doesn't there's a reward in that that's more than just compensation, that's more than just title. I'm not saying they're not important, but it moves it beyond being just about that. So HR has a responsibility both on that business-centric end of people as well as the personal end of developing people.
That was a great, great answer, but I want to dig deeper into that. So I had the pleasure of watching you perform and give your amazing speech at Disrupt HR titled "Can I Get a What?" which was very funny, and standing ovation, people were laughing, people got a lot of insight from it. But I want to talk about a very serious quote. In the beginning of your presentation, you quoted a stat from Deloitte saying that 5% of CEOs think HR is doing an excellent job. Mm-hmm. That's terrible.
Awful.
5%.
Yeah.
So my question is, just doing quick math, assuming more than 5% of HR professionals think they're doing a good job. I mean, if I went out and surveyed 100 HR pros today, I'm assuming more than 5 would say that they think they're doing a good job.
I will say to you, there are more than 5. I'll be specific because I want to use the verbiage that Deloitte used, right? Because I'm with you. There's going to be more than 5% of HR folks who think they're doing an excellent job.
Yes, yes, the word was excellent. That is correct. So if there's only 5% of CEOs that think HR is doing an excellent job, but we can safely assume that a lot more than 5% of HR pros think they're doing an excellent job, why is there such a huge disconnect?
Here are a few thoughts. One, there is a basic humanistic principle there. In our own eyes, things are always better in the work that we do than another person who may do the same exact work. Very rarely do we give as others the same kind of grace in work product as we do ourselves. It starts in school, right? Like I raise my hand, I participate, I should get a better grade. Well, is that the crux of grading? Right? If the grade is only about participation, yes. If it is also about the tests, the projects, the papers, then it doesn't matter that you raise your hand. You have to look to those other metrics that are being used to come up with your grade. But we have gotten away for a long time being enamored with sort of the outward appearance of some of what we do. That carries over into work. It's not just in HR. It is in other areas of work as well. But we are our own cheerleader. And sometimes we feel like, well, if I don't cheer for myself, no one else will. And honestly, if that's the truth, then something's wrong. Once in a while, someone else should cheer for you. It may not be with the fireworks that you're hoping for, but someone should come up alongside you once in a while and say, hey, I got that bit of work that you did. Thank you so much. That was awesome. You saved me so much time. That's actually a compliment. Sometimes you'll have someone come up alongside of you and say, you know, without you, I would never have been able to get my piece done. Thanks. Those simple course of work type interactions should be validation for you. We shouldn't need to overly inflate our own self-worth, which we sometimes do, particularly in HR. And that segues into the second reason. I think in HR, we sort of have this, we're the last kid picked for the kickball team complex. We want to make up for the fact that we are the forgotten child. And so we do that by self-praise. And my father-in-law actually, once in a while in our relationship, will say to me SPS, because he hears me saying something about myself, and SPS means self-praise stinks.
I like that a lot.
And he does like me. Let me add that. He does like me. But he, you know, it gets me back on track, like easy boy, you know, like let's not go too far with this. And I think in HR, we need a little reminder of SPS. We do a great job, and I do think we should have healthy self-esteem about it. However, we can't swing the pendulum too far the other way in order to make up for what we think is not happening in our business relationships. I also think that we have not done a great job in the work that we do to demonstrate how that adds value to the business as a whole so that our CEOs can really be maybe almost spoon-fed an understanding of that connection. It's easy when finance brings numbers. It's easy when operations shows the ways in which production is up or cost of goods has been decreased, or those kinds of things can be very factual. Well, we can do the same thing in HR. We can talk about things like turnover. We can talk about things like retention. We can talk about time to hire. We can talk about the ways in which we have certain programs that, you know, we have a 30% increase in an understanding of a certain skill based on this training that we've done. And I'm not downplaying any of that. That's all very important. But sometimes we just let those things hang and not finish the story. You know, when colleges look at enrolling someone, admitting someone, and someone says, well, I was first in my class. They actually look at the school and the size of the class. Well, why do they do that? If someone tells you they're first, shouldn't that be enough? No. There has to be a context to it. So just because I tell you that time to hire is down, you know, 15%, we're doing it quicker by 15%, what does that mean? How does that benefit us? What's the result of that? What's the context? We need to do a better job of giving the context. I think people, especially in the CEO level, would understand why that might make us more excellent in our work.
Very, very interesting, especially the part when you were saying the SPS. I love that. Definitely going to put that in the show notes. But to my understanding, a lot of people in HR feel overworked, overwhelmed, and underappreciated. So can you explain the discrepancy? I mean, I know you said that a lot of them have self-praise, but at the same time, it seems as though a lot of HR professionals actually don't have the self-praise, and they're not getting the praise from their job. So am I reading this wrong, or in general?
Well, I mean, obviously, in the course of our conversation, there's going to be some generalities that we have to draw, right? But, you know, listen, as a guy who's very involved with HR affinity groups, I will tell you, I don't see a whole lot of poor self-esteem around the room. At least what we project is something that's much more positive. And hopefully it comes from a good place. And I do agree with you. There are probably folks out there who do need some affirmation and do need some folks to come up alongside them. But what we do, because I think of our fear of being found out and seeming even weaker than we want to, because of the ways in which HR is seen as, you know, sort of that necessary loss leader, we sort of mask it a bit. So that doesn't help our impression to the CEO, who sees us walking around with a puff chest. And even if it's built on a house of cards, he or she is only seeing the puff chest and thinks, what is this guy or girl walking around so enamored with themselves for? We can't find people to hire. We aren't keeping people the way that we need to. Our folks are walking around like robots. They're not connected at all. Those kinds of things might be what they see, and it runs counter to perhaps the impression that you're given. So that's one thing I would want to put out there. But in answer to the other part of your question, there are people in HR that feel overworked and all. I'm sure. I think that's my simple answer. I'm sure you do. But so do people in other departments, in other divisions of our organizations. It's very rare that you'll walk up to someone and say, are you really working hard? And they're going to say, oh my gosh, no. I mean, I'm on cruise control every day when I'm here, so I don't even have to think. It's, you know, this job doesn't tax me at all. The time flies by. Nah, it's all a breeze. Very rarely will you find that person. Now, when I do find that person, I actually enjoy that person greatly because I appreciate the honesty. But by and large, we all feel like we work very hard. And I'm not saying we don't. But I think there's a great difference then between working hard and working smart. So are you working smart in the way that you work hard? Is that leading you towards something? If you are just working hard because you spent 60 days doing open enrollment, I got to tell you, I'm not so sure that's a great use of your time. I'm not saying open enrollment's not important. I'm saying we've got technology at a level that we've never had before when it comes to some of the mechanics and processes in HR. How are we not leveraging those better? I still see companies with only paper files, only. And so they're trying to grow multi-state and everything still has to come back to HR in paper to the corporate office. What are we doing? Why would we tax ourselves more and thereby exasperate ourselves more and feel overworked and overwrought by not using these systems? Most payroll companies will give you a system along with that payroll service. So use that stuff better and stop belly aching. I know that's mean, and I appreciate that it is. But I had to learn this myself as well. There are days that it's tough to do what we do, no doubt. But there's a big difference between it being tough to do because we have, you know, enrollment forms that we keep chasing people for versus someone walks into your office, closes the door, and says, can I have 5 minutes? I need to talk to you about the cancer diagnosis I just received. That's a hard day. That's a hard day. We shouldn't make the other days that have to do with our process equally as hard.
Wow. So back to your Disrupt HR presentation, another point that you made was that HR needs to understand the business. What does this mean exactly, and why is this so important for HR to understand the business?
I think that in order to do the kind of work we're required to do, Bruce, I don't see how we can't know soup to nuts, backwards and forwards, the purpose and the meat of the business, right? So whether that's retail, hospitality, whether it's manufacturing, whether it's IT related, whether it doesn't matter. As HR practitioners, we should know every nuance of the business. So what should that look like? I guess I'll just give some examples, right? So when I work in the hospitality space, I go in the kitchen. I watch what the chefs are doing. I ask questions. I talk to the dishwasher. I try to understand the, you know, pastry chef's perspective on why we have to spend X for fresh fruit at certain times of the year, and what that kind of return gives us in that creativity. I want to spend time with the servers. I talk to all of these folks, and there are times where, wait for it, I will actually do one of their jobs, right? I will stand at the host stand, for example, one night, and I'll seat folks and I'll work with runners and bussers because I want to understand. And so when, as an HR practitioner, I come in and have to do those components of the job that are HR, discipline, promotion, termination, onboarding, offboarding, whatever has to happen, benefits, payroll changes, blah, blah, blah. Because I understand the business, these folks that I'm talking to now want to understand what I need to do, and they're more apt to want to hear it because they know I'm in it with them. I think in each of our businesses, and again, that was just one example, but you can do that in any industries. Get in it. Know what your people are doing. That's not really meant to be trite. If you don't go walk the floor and you just find yourself sitting at your desk more and more and more, you're doing something wrong. It also will give your collaborators at your level. So let's say you're a VP of HR. The other VPs of the company who may have responsibility over other disciplines within the organization and see your engaged interaction, it changes the way that dynamic works because you're going to go to them respectfully and say, man, I now have an appreciation of X. I had no idea. You would talk about it and I understood the concept, but once I actually see it happening, man, it's different. And that is tough. How can we work together to change some of that? Maybe we need to do some more training in a particular skill set. Maybe we have to look for people with a certain competency and we haven't really focused on that previously. What do you think about this and this? Now we're doing that out of a knowledge of the business. We're actually showing value based upon business necessity rather than I just went to the latest and greatest HR conference, heard a couple of points, and I'm going to take those points and jam them into this business. It's not received as well. It doesn't mean that those points don't have value, but now that you know the business, you can take those points and make them accessible and applicable in a very specific way.
So I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there that are thinking, John, in theory, that's all great, but let's get down right to reality. I'm super busy. I don't have time to walk the floors or to go into the kitchen or to talk with the marketing department. Matter of fact, even when I go to the marketing or finance department, they don't want to give me the data or the insight into what I want to learn, so I can't even get the data anyway. Or I don't have a great relationship with the different people in the different departments to really understand the business. I mean, how do I still go about doing this if the people that I need to get the information from aren't as open or as interested in me learning that part of the business, or I just simply don't think I have the time?
Yeah, I mean, I'm certain I'm agreeing with you. I'm certain there are people who are listening to me and thinking, all right, Baldino, that's enough. Like, I get that. I'm not saying that anything that I'm talking about is easy, because there is a dynamic change to approach. So in answer of your question, if you don't have time, my response is there's something else that you can change in order to make time. You have to. It's like saying I'm a basketball player, and I don't shoot foul shots well, but I'm so busy learning plays and working on dribbling and working on defensive coverage that I don't have time to work on the foul shots. When you stand at that line and you have to shoot, the foul shot training matters. The foul shot engagement that you've spent time on matters. And when you don't sink them, when your percentage is 10% of shots made, you will feel the effects of that. And there isn't a basketball player who will sit on the bench and say, listen, I'm sorry, but I'm so busy with this other stuff that I just can't get to the foul shots. You're not going to stay on that team very long. I would submit we need to have the same perspective when it comes to HR. Get to the cores. Get to the core. You have to spend time with the people that you say that you're managing. If we really are touting the banner of the talent in the organization is our primary responsibility, both from a personal and a business perspective, and we spend no time with those people, what the heck? Then what we're saying does not line up at all. So you've got to get up. And here's what I also know. When you get up and decide to, I'm not asking you to spend 8 hours a day doing this. I know we've got other stuff to do. Take an hour. Make a plan. Do 3 days a week, an hour each day. I come up with something. You've got to start somewhere. You will be amazed at how much time it saves you on other things because you've done that, because your buy-in capability has gone up. And so perhaps you will see a decrease by 20% in the time that it takes you to get enrollment forms back. If anybody's listening from the benefits world, they really are going to hate me, but I'm not, I'm just using that as an example. I feel like I'm picking on open enrollment, but you will get a better return because people are like, oh, John needs this, so I got to get this back quickly. It's not, oh, HR needs this. There's a difference because now you're a person rather than a department. If you're referred to as part of HR in that like demeaning tone, then we've not done our good job of being engaged as people. And we're supposed to be in the people business, right? Isn't that what HR people say? It's got to be about the people business on both ends, people and business. So get to it. Get in it and get to the business. Now, those of you that think that this is trite, I would say to you, you are going to be able to be smartly responsive at your leadership meetings regarding nuances, processes, and anything that's developmentally oriented by having this knowledge. And for the people that struggle with their relationships with peers at that level, they won't teach me things, they don't show me things, it's because we haven't done a good job, perhaps, of showing the connection behind compliance and administration to the work to be done in the development of the people that we have. Once people start seeing that, then they're going to be more apt to understand why you need to come and understand why cost of goods matters to your, you know, P&L for the month. Why, you know, the answer always isn't, we've got to cut costs, therefore we're going to lay people off. How can we speak to that to say, whoa, wait a minute. If we lay some people off, we're losing competencies. We're losing certain skill sets that we need. That may actually cost us more, despite the fact that our payroll numbers go down. That would be an amazing conversation to have with somebody and be able to point to specific things because we know the business as well as we should.
Hey, podcast listeners, we're about halfway through this episode, so now it's time for a word from our sponsor. But don't worry, we'll be back!
Are you trying to make your HR department more data-driven, but there's not enough time in the day? Are you tired of managing all your HR data in messy spreadsheets? Then you need Employee Cycle, the real-time HR dashboard helping small and medium-sized companies use HR data to achieve workforce goals. Employee Cycle pulls all your HR data from your HR systems and creates a beautiful web-based dashboard, making it easier to identify problem areas and track trends. You can even give your CEO and leadership team access so they can stay updated on workforce insights all the time. Learn more at employeecycle.com and sign up for your free demo today. Now back to this amazing episode.
So again, now we have some listeners saying, okay, John, I buy what you're selling. I get it. I need to better understand my business. But how much of the business? What does that look like? Do I need to understand the financials from every department, cost of goods sold, profit margins? Do I need to understand the P&L from all the different departments? Do I need to understand the ROI from each department? I mean, how deep into all of this am I digging while also trying to be better than that 5% of of HR professionals that the CEOs believe are excellent?
Yeah. Okay. So my easy answer is yes. You should know as much as you can know. I can't necessarily say when it's too much, but what I can say is, of course, there are other responsibilities that you have. It also will depend on the role that you have in your company. For example, if you are an HR generalist, you may not necessarily have access, and it may not be appropriate for you to have access to the P&Ls for every department. It may seem more like you're being nosy rather than wanting to learn. So you have to understand place and position. But what I would hope for in that kind of department, for example, is that the director of HR or the VP of HR would pull his or her team together, maybe monthly, and say, let's take some time to go through this component of the business. Whereas the VP of HR might have a more appropriate time being engaged and interactive with, say, the P&Ls, to use that specific example. It may not make sense for the HR generalist. The VP of HR then can use that as a training opportunity for his or her own team to develop them. Because one day, ideally, this HR generalist will grow into a more substantial role, perhaps not at that company, but down the road, and would have had some investment, some development done in him or her to get to that next level. That's going to require someone to teach. Not likely that the CFO is going to sit with the HR generalist. So let's set some good expectations. That's probably not likely. And if you're the only HR practitioner in your organization, if you've got 175 employees and it's just you, you may not have the time in the ways that a five-person HR department does. Where you can kind of move some schedules and responsibilities around for at least an hour a week kind of thing. I get that for that solo practitioner. I think that's where you've really got to be smart in the way in which you look to leverage tools. How can I get some blocking and tackling help? I can't spend my, 60% of my week processing various paperwork. Can I get somebody even part-time to come in and do 30% of that so that I can look for those ways? Finance folks don't want to spend money, I get it, for another full-time employee. I get it. So meet them in that. Say, I know I want help, and I get that you don't want to hire a full-time person. I gotcha. Let's hire someone part-time. We don't have benefits if we hire somebody part-time that we need to offer, perhaps, and it saves us some money here and there, and it gives me a little bit of time, and in that time, I'm going to be able to do A, B, and C, and this is why A, B, and C matter. Lay out the business plan. Speak that language, and when you can lay out that business plan as an HR person to someone else, in this case the finance person, that relationship now is going to change when it comes to the ways in which you want to engage in other areas of the company, because they understand how you know how to develop a business plan and make a business argument and talk about how you're going to measure the return on this person being added as a part-time employee. And all of that stuff makes sense to you being a true partner in understanding the business rather than the person who just makes sure everything is I's are dotted, T's are crossed. That's important, but you've got to balance that with an understanding of the business. If not, we are never going to get past 5% of CEOs thinking we do an excellent job. They're just going to see us as the paper pushers, the necessary evils. Honestly, I mentioned it briefly before, too many C-suite folks see HR as a loss leader. It's a necessary evil. There's no financial benefit in having HR. And we have let people think that for far too long.
Well, I hope people are taking notes. You're dropping a lot of gems. This is awesome. So the last question that I have about your presentation at Disrupt HR, you talked about, and some people are going to get mad at me for bringing this up, but you talked about the elusive seat at the table. And I know people are tired of hearing it.
Yes.
Seat at the table. I'm trying to get the seat at the table. HR for the longest time is trying to get at the seat at the table. But what's ironic about it is that if you look at blogs, if you listen to podcasts, if you even go to some HR events, people are still talking about it. And you brought it up, so you must have had a reason to bring it up. So, and it was interesting the way you put it. I'm paraphrasing here, but I think you said for the longest time there's been this boardroom and the HR person is peering through the glass saying, can I get a seat at the table? Mm-hmm. So why is that seat at the table so damn important? And is it still something that people should seek? Or is it more about the term? Is it more semantics where it's not more about the seat at the table and it's really about showing value and having your voice heard?
Yeah, I probably am on the board of I hate that term .org. It's just we have kind of run that into the ground, we've sort of lost the intent behind the terminology at the beginning. Yes, obviously we want a seat at the table, just like anybody else. And what that's supposed to mean is that we are valued because what we bring to the organization is worthy of a voice. People would want to hear from us. And so the elusive seat at the table is really something I think that is earned by our action. And so in the context of what you mentioned, yeah, I think that for a long while, HR folks couldn't figure out how to show that value. I think there's more that can do it today, for sure. But I think for a long time, we just didn't know how to, and so we were on the outs. We reported to finance. We reported to operations. We weren't seen as equal to those departments, divisions. And so, we were always, not quite. We were the not quite department. And so my thing is, and I know you heard me, Bruce, share this as well that night, but I if you are waiting for that seat at the table, you are silly. If you're in the highest position of HR in your company, go and sit down. Don't ask. Sit down. And when someone says to you, oh, John, I'm so sorry, we're going to have our executive meeting now. That we reserve this conference room space. I mean, honestly, and again, I know this is partly my personality. I look at that person and say, thank you. Yeah, I did know.
All right.
And they want to know why I'm still sitting there. Are you discussing things about the company? Yes. Are you discussing decisions we're going to make about the finances and the people of the company? Yes. Okay. I have direct responsibility to the largest liability for many organizations in its people. I have direct responsibility for all that. And I shouldn't be a part of this conversation? That doesn't make any sense. So I know that's not what you're saying. What do you mean? And let them kind of try to unpack that, because the business argument for it falls apart. So we have a stronger business argument. However, that tactic is only going to work one time. If we really don't demonstrate our worth, our aptitudes in those engaged times with leadership, we will be asked to not sit at that table. That's what we should be more concerned about. Don't worry about getting the seat. It's keeping it. And that only comes through relevant engagement in understanding the business and our people. We should, at the back of our hand, just know everything we need to know about the business and have whatever resources we need to be able to talk about every person in the organization. I've sat in leadership meetings where new verticals are discussed. They want to figure out how they can start an offshoot, a different vertical, something that is connected to the business at hand, but they see this as being something they need to add to their services or to their product line. And they'll talk about the kinds of competencies or skill sets that they need overall. What kind of attitude should the person have? What kind of skill set? All that good stuff, right? And I'm able to say, you know what? Jim and Susan in accounting actually also know how to do X, Y, and Z, which is X and Y directly tied to this, and Z is something that we can train more specifically to this vertical you're talking about. We can actually probably move them in specifically to have responsibility in that vertical. We can shift some of the other work around in accounting. Some of those folks are working at about 80% capacity. Let's take them up to 90% capacity, and if we needed to get a temp in for a couple of months to help get us over the hump, we could do that. And really, payroll hasn't increased. I mean, people will lay flowers at your feet to be able to get a new vertical basis launched with no real increase to payroll. I mean, you, the finance person may get down on bended knee to ask you to marry him or her. I mean, really. And so if you aren't at that table because you're afraid, or you just are waiting for the invitation, go sit down. Show your worth.
Well, you heard John. Definitely show your worth. So I want to change the topic a little bit and discuss the relationship between HR consultants and their clients. So I know some of your clients have HR professionals working there, and then some of them don't. So for the listeners out there who are maybe a little bit more junior, not in a director level, or in a position where they can actually oversee HR, and they're either thinking about working with an HR consulting firm, or the CEO and the leadership team is thinking about bringing someone in, how should they think about engaging with someone like yourself so that they can show credibility, they can show value, and they can show ROI? And how do you help them do that?
Yeah. So, I would say, first of all, thanks for that question. I think that the key really is the why, right? If we're at a place where we've got to think, why are we not firing on all cylinders? Why is this not as strong as it could be? Why are we perhaps plateauing? Because it doesn't always have to come from a deficit, right? Or some sense of neglect. Sometimes it does. But sometimes engagement with consultancies can really be about that next mountaintop, the next opportunity for growth. And so sometimes a fresh set of eyes is really helpful to that. I know that in, for example, in the executive coaching work that we do and the senior leadership meetings, trainings that we hold, a lot of it has to do with that. I think that if you're working as a practitioner, particularly those that are entry level, there could be certain areas that you just haven't been exposed to and that there isn't really a sense of expertise that you can lean on. And so the consultancy sometimes ought to provide those levels of expertise and oftentimes can sort of map out a path of, okay, you're here, you desire to get to there, how does that happen? We can kind of help be sort of the Sherpa in that and set up a plan and walk folks through it because of the different skill sets that we have that perhaps may not be internally available to the company that knows that it's lacking. And so oftentimes, I would say even in our business, that's what we find. Companies will call in and say, look, we are a mess with compliance and we have no one in here. We have an office manager that we ask to do the paperwork. We need somebody in here who really knows what they're doing. And that's what they, you know, that blocking and tackling becomes the primary need. Sometimes we'll have organizations call and say, look, we have a great HR team. You know, I am the director of HR. We have a great team, but we really need help when it comes to understanding compensation strategies or true organizational development or workforce planning, and we don't have anybody internally that has that experience, that skill set. Can you guys come in and work with us, lead us through that, partner with us in that?
And on the flip side, how do you go about showing the value of HR to a CEO or a leadership team that doesn't have an HR person working internally versus the way that an internal HR person would show value? Because I'm assuming it would be totally different.
It is different in some ways. I would agree with that. I mean, I think part of the reason it's different is because the kind of dialogue, for example, that I can have with a CEO may be different than someone who's an internal employee. I don't have anything to lose in many ways. If you want to have an initial discussion with me, I'm going to ask you hard questions. That may not be the level where the internal HR practitioner is with his or her CEO. But I'm going to sit with that CEO and say, let's talk about people management. Let's talk about your management development. Let's talk about your leadership development for yourself. Where has that gotten you? How many are running the race with you? How much steam have you lost the past 12 months? And really, you know, pick at those things. And often CEOs are lonely. I got to tell you, they're often lonely in having that kind of person to bounce some of this off of because there's a weakness that's shown in it. And we don't do very well with weakness as a people across the board. Whether, you know, your CEO or your entry level, we just don't give people as much of a measure of grace as we ought to. Not everybody is going to know everything. I'm talking to CEOs that have never been CEOs before. This is their first time, for example. I can't expect them to know everything that it means to be a CEO. And quite honestly, CEOs that have been doing it for 20 years, the good ones, they're still learning things that they don't know how to do well or at all. So if we aren't good at being able to encourage people through that, then we're doing them a disservice, which is why, again, when I get to sit with some of them, it tends to be a very, very bare bones, genuine conversation, and they'll see value in, yeah, you're right. I can't get where I need to go with this company because I myself don't even know the pathway. People think I do, but I don't. And I need to have someone on my side who's going to kind of raise the banner with me, be an encouragement to me, but help me be a sort of a communicative, appropriately communicative leader of where we got to get to.
Now, I know this is a funny question, and I'm really interested in your answer, but I know you said that a lot of internal HR professionals, especially a department of one, get lonely, or they may not have anybody to bounce ideas off of. But then I'm also assuming that there are those HR professionals that feel like you're taking their job, and then there's tension between the HR consulting firm and the internal HR person in regards to who knows what they're talking about, who's going to implement the strategy, and who's really going to have the ear of the CEO or leadership team. So how do you deal with that? And on the other side, how should the HR person of one or two or however many think about the HR consultant as coming in as a friend and an ally versus someone who's looking to basically tell them what to do and potentially
replace
them?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually, and I appreciate you asking. I think that if you are an HR practitioner, so I guess I should give a little bit of context. There are HR services that are offered to various companies as a support structure. And what we find in some of those offerings is that the folks on the other end of the phone or of the live chat aren't really HR practitioners. They've been trained by a certain company to provide a certain set of answers and no more. If that's been the experience of some of the HR folks that are working internally in organizations, then they, I can appreciate and understand why they have a sort of a sour look on outside help or consultants, because it's not been very strong. I think that, and coming back to your question, I think that if we do, and if we do a good job, of communicating to the HR practitioner or practitioners, we're really not interested in your job at all. We need you to be boots to the ground in many ways to what's happening at the company. We're not hired to be, by and large, 40 hours a week on site. That's just not the engagement that we typically have with companies. So it wouldn't make sense for us in some ways to get rid of everyone in order to do what we do. What we would do, though, is try to demonstrate in the shortfalls that they have how we can be supportive. What we would want to do in the areas of growth that they have at least laid out for themselves, how can we add value to that? My desire is that we would make the internal practitioners look awesome. That's a win for me. One of our mantras is to set others up for success. So if I'm just setting myself up for success, that doesn't match what my desire is. So I want there to be wins. I love the phone calls from the HR managers that we work with who call and say, this was awesome. This is what they said. This is how it was received. That makes us very happy because that's what we want to be about. And those that are working on their own, or with this very, very small department, they could appreciate that, I think, much better too, because they recognize we our days are not our own. We walk into our offices and we have just become a system of answering the phone and emails, and 90% of our day is responsive, reactive, rather than proactive. And we want to get to a place where we can be proactive. So they want to offload the blocking and tackling admin stuff, let's say, for example, to us. Or they want help with figuring out how do we develop a communication strategy for our teams. Or they want help with, we have a bunch of managers who really have never been managers before, they worked here. They need some help with skill sets. Or we have a CEO who is crying out for support in certain areas, and it looks like it's supposed to fall to HR, and none of us know what he's talking about or how to help him or her, right? So how do we do that? And I think that if we can come alongside and say, here's what we can do together, that's really the best way that it works for us.
Love it. Love it. Great answers. Thanks for those answers. So now we're going to have a little bit of fun in the section that I like to call...
What? I've been having fun this whole time.
Yes, but even more fun. Even more fun. Or at least a more fun podcast section. So this section, okay, I like to call the real, the random, and the ridiculous, where I ask you a real question, a random question, and a ridiculous one. So let's start. The real. Do you like bread pudding? This is a very real question.
No.
And I tell everyone on the podcast when I ask this question that this will determine whether or not we can be friends.
I won't change my answer. I'm not big on the consistency. Maybe I haven't had it made well. The times I've had it, it just seems, you know, unimpressive.
Well, I'm just going to skip over that question now because
I'm sorry.
You just hurt my feelings, and I am a bread pudding connoisseur. I search the world high and low for it. It's okay. Maybe I can make you a believer, and we'll meet up. I might even just send some to your office, and then we can go from there. Okay. The random question. So clearly, you're bald, as am I. And I want to know, what razor do you use?
So this is funny. So I still use an electric razor on my head with obviously no attachments or anything on it. So it gives it just a very, very bare minimal stubble. But on the face, I actually have been a Dollar Shave convert for the past year. And because I just really appreciate that business model and how much they've grown. So yeah, I'm on the auto mail for the straight razors for the face.
Nice. I use Dollar Shave Club for my head. I do.
Okay.
For my head, and I use Bevel for my face.
Nice.
Interesting. Nice. Okay. So the ridiculous question, what's the most ridiculous way you've ever heard someone describe the role of HR?
Oh gosh. The most ridiculous. The first thing that comes to mind, which I don't know if I want to swear that it's the most ridiculous. I'd have to think about that because people tell me all kinds of crazy things. But sort of that the impression that I got into HR because I like people. That is so ridiculous because you'll be in HR for about 3 months and you'll realize you really hate people. And if you only got in it because you like people and that's the only reason you got into it, when you work at a company where there just are a bunch of annoying people who are bothering you, that's what you feel like. I'm not saying that's true, but you'll get to the point where you're just answering the phone and emails all day. Hey, can you make this change to my benefits? Hey, can you? You get frustrated if you're not really thinking clearly about people, and that if you only base it off of an emotional, I like people, then you will quickly grow to not like them. So it's got to be built on something more.
Love it. And thank you for answering the question to the real, random, and ridiculous. So last question. Now that you've spoke about people being one of the worst parts of HR for a lot of people, maybe this will be the same answer, but what's your favorite part and least favorite part of working in HR?
Well, I may surprise you. The least favorite is easy. I mean, the mountain of compliance that the government thinks is appropriate is just ridiculous. And for those who are listening who are as old as I am, I mean, there was a time where by and large, it really was, you know, a lot of maybe some federal stuff that you had to pay attention to. Very, very little state. But now we're like crazy federal, crazy state, crazy local. Your business location can differ by a business across the street in terms of local compliance. I mean, it's just gotten absurd, and it really sets businesses up to be targets for, you know, unintentional lawsuits and bad attitudes. So the compliance stuff is out of hand. So that's my least favorite. But actually, my favorite are the people. I do still believe in the people management side of HR very much, and that gets me going. And I shared the company mantra, but that really comes out of my personal mantra. I get excited to watch other people be set up for success. I love watching them achieve. So the development of people is a joy for me. It just excites me still, because I just watch people achieve things that perhaps they thought that they couldn't, or they achieve things that circumstances have set them up perhaps to not be able to achieve. And they have this great self-esteem, self-worth moment, victory, and it charges them up for the next hill to climb. I love being a part of helping people be set up for that.
Well, John, this has been an amazing, awesomely, amazingly great special episode. Had a ton of fun. You gave great answers, and they were also entertaining as well. So just want to give you another round of applause. Woo! This is great.
Thank you.
John, where can people find you on the internet, and is Humoriso hiring?
So I don't know about the last part. We always are looking for great talent, I guess, but you know, I don't know that I would say we've got 10 roles open right now. They can obviously humoriso.com for the company. Humoriso is on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, you know, all your good social media channels. If you need to look for me directly, my Twitter handle is JB Alive. I'm also on Instagram at the John Baldino, and feel free to connect with me there. Reach out to me on LinkedIn as well.
Great. And we'll be putting all that contact info and links in the show notes. So I hope you all learned a lot. I'm sure I did. Thanks again, John, for an amazing episode. Also, if you're tired of manually tracking your HR data and you want to connect more with your CEO and leadership team through data, and you want an HR dashboard, go to employeecycle.com to sign up for a demo. But, folks, we did it again. Make sure that you download the Employee Cycle feed on your podcast player, give us a 5-star ratings on iTunes, and stay tuned for the next episode. HR pros out there, keep hiring, training, and retaining the best workforce possible. Later, kids.